Buccaneer says, here is the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Bill Curry Ford. Ira, don't worry, drive Curry. That's what we say now. Don't worry, drive Curry. Bill Curry Ford presents the podcast. He's the king of Newport Richey, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. The podcast is on, and we're fired up. Ira, we got some stuff to talk about. Ira has a couple of rants in him today. We're looking forward to that. And at Bill Curry Ford, Ira, make no payments for 90 days on a new Ford. They're giving fans a break so you can pick up your payments later and take a summer vacation from payments. And they've got so much more going on at the dealership. See all the offers at BillCurryFord.com. That's the family name, Curry, C-U-R-R-I-E, one of the last family-owned dealerships. GM Sean Sullivan, he will give you the Ira Kaufman podcast discount. Just reach out to him through the website, or you can find him at the beautiful, incredible, redone dealership. The future has arrived a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Now they've got over 100 loaded vehicles, Ira, for the service department. I just got the word from Sean, and all the great specials of this month, the leases, everything else. Check it out at BillCurryFord.com. They'll service at your home. They'll give you a ride to and from, get your vehicle. Amazing what they have going on there now. And our friends at Florida's Elite Restoration, they are ready for you 24/7, and that means a lot. You know, you need a disaster plan when disaster strikes, and you have to call Florida's Elite Restoration before you call your insurance company, so they'll come out there with the greatest and the latest technology, evaluate what's happening at your property and what you need to do to get it restored, and then if you want to use their services, they'll go to battle with your insurance company to get the money you need to make these repairs and restorations. It's critical. They have to be part of your plan. Florida's ElitRestoration.com. When you first call, if you mention Ira or JoeBucksFan.com, and you eventually use their services, they will give you $500, and that's money you can use for your deductible or just put in your pocket as you make these restorations. Florida's ElitRestoration.com. Check them out today. Check out their amazing reviews. Another family-owned company servicing the entire Bay Area. Florida's ElitRestoration.com. Fire, flood, mold, storm damage, whatever it is, you call them 24/7. Sage, before we get to the Bucks, I wanted to throw this past you because I was curious. I was looking at some of the concerts that are coming to the Bay Area. Regular listeners here know that you're an aficionado of music, take great pride, and you go see a lot of shows. Do you already have your tickets to Johnny Mathis, Ira?
I knew it was going to be somebody good, Steve. I knew it. You know what strikes me, Lee? And I don't know, because we're a media market or whatever, but I'm getting a little sick of it. I look at, you know, some of these venues, whether it's Ruth Eckert or Capitol Theater in Clearwater. Lee, instead of getting the real deal, we get these tribute bands. And it's cheaper, of course, because the real deal charges $200, and the tribute band charges $40, $49. But, Lee, I don't want to see a tribute band. I don't want to see tribute Led Zeppelin. I don't want to see Jimmy Page on a stage. I don't want to see a tribute Bee Gees. I'm tired of this, Lee. The bantering that's going on, I don't think this happens in some of the bigger cities. And let me digress for 1 minute. I got a quick story, Steve, about Bill Curry Ford and that dealership. Steve, I made a mistake today. Classic, you know, should have known better. My other vehicle, Steve, it's not a Ford. It's got my cherry red Escape. So I need an oil change. Well, so what do, Lee? I try one of these places. Take five. Take five. They're all over the place. Take five. You sent me a car. It's supposed to be a 5-minute oil change. You know, very simple. It's cheap. And here we go. Well, Lee, I pulled in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I knew I was in trouble. I had three guys working on the car. There's nobody else around. No other vehicles. Nothing. They had nothing to do. Now I got three guys all over me. I knew this was going to be a problem. Next thing I know, Lee, they're finding filters out of the thin air. The guy went to my glove compartment. He pulled out a filter. He took the glove compartment off. I didn't even know there was a filter in there. Lee, you go to Bill Curry Ford when you purchase a Ford. And even if you're not under warranty anymore, you know, you go in there and it's $39 and you ran out. Lee, see, you can't get out of these places without $100. You can't do it. So another reason to go and take your business to Bill Curry Ford. They'll take good care of you. I'm done with those fake five voices, Lee. I'm done with them.
Well, I'm not going to disparage any other company, but what I will say is that, you know, Bill Curry does such good service, I can't even think about going anywhere else unless something happens, which has never happened, by the way, outside of tire pressure. I've never had anything wrong with my F-150 pickup that I bought from Bill Curry. I've never had anything go wrong with it where I couldn't drive it into Bill Curry. And Bill Curry does such good service, I'm being very sincere when I say this. I know they're a sponsor of Joe Buck's Fan, sponsor of yours, Ira, as well. And my experience with them has been nothing short of five-star. And I can't even imagine why I would want to go anywhere else.
You know, Steve, the point is that guys like Lee and I...
Ira, the point is, you go to a cheap oil change place, all you have to say is, no thanks, I don't want the cabin air filter, and I don't need the special lube, okay? That's it.
Oil, yeah, special lube from time to time. Come on.
I still don't think it would have been $39, Steve. I don't think so. Anyway, I was going to say that, you know, Lee and I come from experience with Bill Curry Ford. It's not like we've never used them. It's not like we don't know them. So many, you know, celebrities talk about products that they don't use. We've had Sean Sullivan talk about Florida's elite restoration. See, so these are first-hand accounts, and not just talking about them because they're sponsors.
Are you calling me a celebrity?
He is. I don't say much for real celebrities, then.
All right, Ira, look, enough of this. We'll see you at Johnny Mathis or at the Aerosmith Farewell Tour. But the...
Real quick, I got one for Ira about Johnny Mathis. There was this guy, he was a Howard Stern wannabe, but he had talent. Back when I was in college, he was like the FM guy in St. Louis. And he blew up, got a job at a news station, and he's still down there. So many years later. Well, anyway, he said about Johnny Mathis, that his parents used to listen to Johnny Mathis. And he said, when you listen to Johnny Mathis, you swear there's something screwed up in your radio. But when he sings, he stops mid-verse and you start beating on your radio. Hey, there's something wrong with the radio.
I have never bought a CD, Johnny Mathis CD, Steve. I never will. If you're talking about John Fogerty, Steve, now you got something.
I'm very much pro tribute because of, let's say, there's a Led Zeppelin tribute band. I think it's fair to say that we will never see Led Zeppelin play Tampa again. But we might see Led Zeppelin tribute bands. And those guys, they make good money, man. There's a Van Halen tribute band. I hate the name of it, but they play before 8,000-9,000 people a night.
Some are better than others, Lee.
That just all confused me because you're like, hey, you don't think these big markets get tribute bands. You think the Beatles are playing in Chicago or something? I mean, they're gone. They're dead. They're dead, Ira. That's the whole point of the tribute band. All right. Listen, Sage.
In 30 years, there's going to be somebody that's a Sage tribute columnist. I just want you to know that. That's going to happen.
Actually, it's interesting that you mention that, Ira. You know, in 30 years, I'll be a Sage tribute columnist and podcaster. I was thinking of maybe purchasing the rights to your column, so God forbid you're not here one day, I could just keep writing as you. It would be like you never passed away. It would be a unique situation. Sage, I got to ask you this. You wrote your column, $9 or something to prove, and nothing new, meaning things we've talked about here before. Everybody can read it, Joe Bucks at joebucksfan.com. But one thing that I think you harp on a lot, and it's a unique situation, is the standpoint of Todd Bowles. Now, as you wrote, skeptics point out that Tampa Bay is 18-19 on his watch, and a once prolific offense has turned pedestrian. Now, I think you're the only one who walks around town saying Todd Bowles is 18-19, but I do get the point that he does have a losing record and the offense has gone to crap, and that's just the reality. Yes, Mayfield had a good year. Yes, Mike Evans had a breakout year, but the numbers show a bad offense, and you want to have a good offense, then you do better than half the league, and they're not there. Obviously, you know the troubles of the running game. But where do you think Bowles really stands, Ira, in the sense of the fans? Do they view him as the face of the franchise? Has that shifted to Mayfield because Bowles is not the most exciting and interesting head coach? Has that dynamic changed?
I think the general feeling, I get the sense overwhelmingly, he has not won them back from the Rams debacle playoff. And they're not at the end of the Lions playoff game. They're still holding it against the Bleak. And division championships notwithstanding, there's still a lot of skeptics out there about Bowles. They remember his record in New York. They remember what the Buck record was those last 2 years under Arians. They remember that with the hell of an offense to boot those 2 years. Now, you have that when Brady at his best, but Brady was there for better or worse. Like, he was there in 2022. He took every snap. He didn't get hurt. And, you know, Evans was around, and Godwin got hurt at the end of the year, but he was there for most of the year. And they haven't worn out balls yet. Not yet. And I think it's going to take double-digit wins. I don't know if he can get that. And it's Devin that's sloppy. You guys think he can? I'm a little skeptical about it. Lee, I just don't think they've embraced him. And, you know, look, they didn't embrace Connor either. Or Seattle. Or Lovey. Arians is a different story, Lee. A lot of love for Arians. You know, he left under mysterious circumstances. We know that. One day the truth will come out. We shall see. But it's a funny thing, Lee. You know, a team that's won 3 straight division crowns, 2 of them under Bowles, a blowout playoff victory under Bowles, a very credible performance in Ford Field under Bowles, yet a lot of questions remain about him. Lee, I think some of it is time management, critical decisions about 4th and 2, what are you doing? He's got a ways to go to win them over, Lee. He's still got a ways to go. I think the best way to sum up is the fans have softened on Bowles. Now, they used to be very, very, very critical. And they've softened on him. I'm not saying they're embracing him. I'm not saying they've accepted him. I'm not saying they're screaming for him to be fired. I do agree with what you're saying that you know, he hasn't won them over completely. When Arians around, that was an entertaining offense. It was an aggressive offense. It was an attacking offense. And they had the weapons to do that. Most of those weapons are still with the Bucs. Unfortunately, the offense since Bowles left is not an attacking offense per se. Yeah, sure, once in a while they'll attack, but not like Arians did. It was 4 quarters of attack offense. Now it's like they pick their spots. In fact, last year, you could argue with the boring offense with left, which it was a frustrating offense. So I sort of see where you're coming from, Evan. I sort of agree. I know fans haven't forgotten the Cooper Cup play in the playoffs a couple years ago, and they're still a little irked about that Cooper timeout in Detroit. However, I don't see the outrage anymore. If the Bucs are losing this season, that will pick up, that will return. Again, I use the word softened, and I think that's the best way to describe it. They're suspicious still. I think that's another good term. To back up what you're saying about Bowles and his offense, I came across something last night that was, it really disturbed me. Warren Sharp came out with a stat for this decade, beginning with the 2000 season. Teams that have overcome losing after 3 quarters to win a game, they come from behind. The Bucks had the fourth most wins when losing after 3 quarters this decade. I'm like, wow, that's a little surprising. I didn't know that. You know, this surprised the heck out of me. And I'm like, you know what? I better start checking. I started going through 2023. I started going through 2022. Ira, it's gruesome. It's gruesome. Last year, when the Bucks were losing after 3 quarters, they never won a game. 0-7. When Leftwich was offensive coordinator, 11 times, Ira, they were losing entering the fourth quarter. 11 times. You've got Tom Brady. You've got Mike Evans. You've got Chris Godwin. And you can't get a lead after 3 quarters with those guys? You've got to try to be horrible. But it's true. Canales ever guided his offense to a come-from-behind win if the Bucks were losing after 3 quarters. Leftwich was pathetic. Not quite that bad, but still, you have Tom Brady, Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin, and 11 times you're losing after 3 quarters? How? That's a great point, Lee. And Brady among all the great things, you know, that he accomplished. He was famous for the fourth quarter comeback. He the Seattle Super Bowl. I was at both of them. Seattle, you know, they had the Legion of Doom at their peak, and they were up 10 on Brady in the fourth quarter, and Brady wins the game. That was the famous Malcolm Butler, you know, great interception game. But Brady rallied them in the fourth quarter against a hell of a defense. So, Lee, you're absolutely right about that. Steve, one more point I want to make about Bowles and the fans, and I think this is an important one. I think one way he could win them back unequivocally, besides, you know, going 11-6, is if Liam Cohen turns out to be a very good hire. That's on Bowles' resume. That's not on Lane. That's on Bowles. Let's give him that. He picked him. He picked Canales. My jury's out on Canales. I'm not going to bury Canales, but Steve, the numbers are the numbers. They average so many points a game. Steve, they played 17 regular season games. They topped 20.7 times. Now, Lee, 20 points, that's a low bar. That's a low bar.
Not just that, but you know, when I said earlier how the Bucs never won a game last year when they were losing after three quarters.
Yeah.
Well, we all know they never scored a touchdown once on an opening drive. Maybe Canales might have won a game in the fourth quarter if his offense would have figured out how to score on a first drive.
Yeah, through the looking glass, you can't say the Canales hire was a winner. Steve, you really can't say that.
I don't know how you can say that. I'm not saying the guy was great, but they were a much better offense the second half of the season. You've written it up yourself.
Yep.
You know, nobody expected him to have a good start with no experience, and Mayfield with a new offense. He did a good job. I'm not going to give him an A, but I think he got a good B-minus there as a first-time coordinator, so I can't kill him.
Well, too many players for me had really good years for that to be a coincidence.
All right, well, I'll give him the postseason. I like the offense, but Lee, we also had the New Orleans game, which was awful.
Mm-hmm.
And the Carolina game, which was awful. So, you know, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, very mixed bag, you know, and those two games were terrible, of course. The three games before that, they averaged, I think it was 31.5 points per game, Atlanta, Green Bay, Jacksonville. So, you know, it was just one of those things. It's gone, and we've moved on. And Sage...
Steve, looking back at last year, one thing we never mentioned, Lee, the way things turned out with Green Bay, that was a hell of a win. I mean, Lee, by the end of the season, the Packers were damn good. Look what they did in the first playoff game against, you know, underdogs against Dallas, and it was never a game. And Love looked great, and the Bucs handled them.
Yeah, I know you talk to Todd Bowles often, off the record, of course, a lot of times. Do you think the way the Bucs played up in Green Bay, and it was very much un-Buck-like weather. It was cold, not for Green Bay standards, but certainly for Floridian standards. It was a cold, dreary, rainy day, Green Bay, middle of December, winter, you're on the road, traditionally a very tough place to play. They hammered Green Bay without Devin White. Do you think that was the game where Todd Bowles said to himself, we can win without Devin White. We do not need Devin White.
I understand your point, Lee, but correct me if I'm wrong, Lee, Steve. The last two regular season games, I think he went back to Devin White as the starter, and then Britt started the two postseason games. But I understand your point, Lee. All around, that was a hell of a character win for the Bucs. And Bowles.
Character win. That
character win.
All right, one more guy with the offense. You know, we've dissected it 7 million ways already. We know what we're looking for. We'll talk more about that as we get toward training camp. The Bowles thing, do you think there's something he can do that's not on the field? Right? Does he need to be signing autographs every day at training camp this year and really mingling in ways that he just doesn't do? Does he need to make an effort to do something? And I bring this up because obviously it's not his job to be popular. However, Bowles himself, he's said it three or four times in interviews since he got the Bucs job. So maybe twice a year he has said this. They've asked him how he felt he's improved as a head coach since he was with the Jets. And Bowles typically includes in his answer that he's better with the media. And he takes pride in that. Whatever that means, he likes that he's better with the media than he was in New York. But being better with the media is kind of in some ways the equivalent of being better with the fans, and maybe he needs to just shake some hands. I don't know. Is there something he can do that would endear him a little more? Now, I believe, Ira, you said that they didn't like Dirk Cutter. The fans really did like Dirk Cutter after his first year. A lot of excitement through his first year, going into Hard Knocks. People were into Cutter, training camp, and what was going to happen that year with the new offense, and DeSean Jackson coming in, and Cutter was beloved. Mike Smith was a lovable guy who just had a great defense, and then the whole thing fell apart, and the fans realized he was a bad head coach, and that was that. So, I don't know. What do you think Bills has to do?
Well, you're right about Cutter. He did have a pretty exciting moment. It was believable. But you're right. I remember training camp, the fans were chanting Cutter's name. They were getting behind him. And that's because it looked like this team was on the rise and then it crashed. We as Eames pointed out how you feel about it, but I think it's all about what on the field with Bowles. He's very affable. I mean, he's a hard guy to dislike. Why would you dislike the guy?
We see a different Bulls defense. They see a guy who barely moves, barely says anything. He just stands there. And that's the image the fans have. We talk to him, and we see him behind the scenes. Like you said, an affable guy, at times a jovial guy, at times a guy that's like, you hear him laugh. You can hear him from two football fields away laugh. He's a great guy. You know, when the cameras are on him, he stiffens up. You know, even those press conferences, once he gets away from that podium, he's a different human being. He gets behind the microphone with the camera on him, and he just immediately tightens up, and he clams up, and he goes to the coach speak like he's Belichick. But that's the image the fans have of him. I mean, he's a really cool guy, but he certainly doesn't demonstrate that when the camera's on him, and that's all fans have to go by. You know, we're going to talk about this in a moment. There's only so many fans who go to training camp, and they see him interact with people. So the vast majority of Bucks fans, they only see what the TV cameras show. And the TV cameras show a stick figure.
He's a high character guy, Steve. Great family guy. No question about it. But Steve, Lee's point about being spoken on the sidelines, well, that's true. And maybe that hurt Tony Dungy in Tampa a little bit too. But Steve, if you're winning, that kind of mutes it. I mean, Tom Landry, you know, a stick figure. Joe Gibbs was no dynamo. Bill Walsh was no dynamo. Shula, when he wasn't chewing somebody out nightly. But, you know, they can't all be Hank's Rick. Steve, they're all Hank's Rick.
All right. We're going backwards in the years here.
All right, I'm not sure if you saw this. I was actually shocked in two ways. Jackie Davidson, who I've never met.
I saw that.
Yes. Excuse me, I always heard about her. I always hear Light talk about her. But I've never met her, never been introduced to her.
Lee, real quick, Jackie Davidson, she was the analytics chief for the Buccaneers and has been with the team, I think, now about 5 years. Go ahead.
Three, I know, but yeah. But by the way, Ira, she said on that NFL Network show that you said you watched that she's in constant communication with Bowles in the middle of the game. She's on the headset. And they're doing all the analytics. That shocked me. Did that surprise you?
I dropped the remote, Lee.
I couldn't believe it. You know, Steve, I was under the impression, I don't know why, but I was, that she worked more with Greenberg on salary cap issues. And that discussion that Lee's referring to last week, which I saw, and she's well-spoken, dwelled on analytics. And Lee's right. Constant communication. Well, Lee, that begs the question, should I now blame Jackie Davidson for not calling timeout in the fourth field? That's a fair question. You know, she said she's now helping with him, and that's springtime. I don't know, is she advising Bowles this? She admitted that he doesn't always take her advice, and at times he gets frustrated with her, but he does a good job of swallowing it, not showing his frustration, but she understands he's upset with her. But I was like, now I thought she also did a lot of player analytics, not necessarily for Greenberg, but for Light. I thought she did that as well, and she may do that as well. But I had no idea she was on a headset with Bowles during the games.
Steve, weren't you under the impression she was dealing primarily with salary cap issues? I didn't know she was that into analytics.
No, I knew she was contracts as well as the analytics. I had no idea that she was on the headset. Now, I don't know if her analytic realm crosses into time management. That's totally different than analytics from a football standpoint. Like, hey, it's 3rd and 3 against these guys. We got to do this, right? But it is very interesting. It does beg the question of that non-call of a timeout. Is there anybody who had a share of that responsibility? I think I've told you this either before. I looked into the game footage and had somebody doing some research on it into the feeds that were not provided by the broadcast, just to see if Bowles, we don't even know if Bowles had his headset on at the time. He may have taken it off because...
That's a great question,
you know,
Steve.
So that really is the ultimate question for me, but that answer doesn't exist, and that footage is not on the broadcast that I've watched many times already, like you watched the Zapruder film in 6th grade, Ira.
You know, Steve, I'm very curious. You know what? I'm going to make that a project to train against, Steve. Besides, that's going to be job two. Job one is making sure I got a towel, a hat, and sunglasses. That's job one. Job two, Lee, is to try to bear down on who the hell is Bowles talking to during the game, and is he talking to Liam? Is he going to be talking to Liam Cohen? Is he going to be talking to Davidson? Is he calling Georgia to have a truck ride to Arias while the Hunger Games going on? I'm going to figure that out.
When
you said Georgia, I thought you were going to say Kirby Smart, and it's not. Bowles John.
The Jackie Davidson thing, it really opens up the question as to, was she in the ear of Dave Canales? And that's a whole other situation, because Bowles talks about how he gives his coordinators autonomy and his hands off there, you know, except for the big helicopter kind of decision. So maybe she's talking to everybody else too. I don't know what the value necessarily would be with her talking directly to Todd Bowles, saying, "Hey, it's 3rd and 5. You don't even have that much time to make those decisions." So I don't know. That's something to find out, Ira.
Maybe she's bouncing some defensive ideas off Bowles too, Steve. Maybe that opens up all kinds of questions.
Speaking of all kinds of questions, we've got all kinds of questions for you, because you are the sage. Your buddy Bruce Arians was talking last week, Ira, to a small outlet in Phoenix. And aside from being very high on the Cardinals, and a lot of people are, and of course Sean Sullivan, our draft guru, is, if you haven't listened to his NFC West podcast breakdown of the draft, it's a must listen. Very good job by Sean there. Arizona did have a hell of a draft. But Arians talked in there in that interview, Ira, and he said that, and it's something he had told us off the record, but I didn't realize to the extent that it was a daily thing. He told that the reporter, he demanded that he was provided all media from around the country on his desk before he saw the players in the morning. And he would read as much as he could, because he wanted to know what they were saying, and he wanted to know if they were repeating the messages that they were getting from the team, or they were getting saying something else. What do you think of that, and do you think Todd Bowles is in that camp?
Well, the first thing I think of, Steve, and Lee, maybe even managers in baseball fall into this category. Lee, I've covered NFL coaches, more than one, that have claimed over the years, while you're covering them, they don't read the clips and they don't know anything that anybody's reading. They don't know anything. They don't want to. They're not interested. You know, Gruden used to call it the elevator music. Elevator music. You know, like, what we wrote doesn't matter. And he's not aware of it. And Lee, what do you find out after the guy leaves the job? They're in everywhere. There's a reason that the staff compiles these daily clips, Lee. There's a reason. The coach wants it. The general manager wants it. Now, Arians is very specific. Gruden read it because, you know, he wanted to laugh at Roy Cummings and anybody else that was weighing in on the organization, and myself included. Arians is more specifically, he claims that he wanted to see if the message from the coaches is being parroted by the players. I'll take him at his word for that, Lee. And I think you're going to find most of the time, even if the players don't believe what they're saying, they're going to tell the media when the microphones and the cameras are out. I think they're going to tell the media what they are hoping to impress the coaches with. Lee, you understand what I'm saying. They're not going to say something opposite to what the coaches have been preaching. That would make them look bad. So I think it's interesting what Arian said, but but we didn't really give him credit because at least he said, on the record, I read those clips. I've covered a lot of coaches that say, never saw anything that you guys like. You know, I was so proud of it, Lee, that they're above the fray. And then you find out they've been lying the whole time.
Yeah. Long ago, whenever I hear a coach, I don't care what you guys like. Oh, yeah, you do, because sooner or later, you'll text me or you'll call me, you'll tune me out. He won't be the first coach to say that I read it. It goes to one ear and out the other, you know, when coaches say that. Yay or nay, whether they say, I read your stuff, or no, I don't read your stuff. Whatever. I don't pay any attention to it. I will say this, because I thought the world of it. I'll never forget one night, it was about 11 o'clock, and we all know that coaches get up really early in the morning. They get up way, maybe Arians doesn't, but most coaches do. And it was about 11 o'clock, maybe quarter after 11, I'm working on a story, and I get a text. Like, okay, that's a little odd, getting a text at 11 o'clock. Most of us, people do that, but other than Steve, that rarely happens. I look, it's Dirk Cutter, like, oh, what did I do wrong? What's happening? What did I do wrong? And sure enough, he's like, hey, you know, I'm reading this story, and it was about penalties, and I was referring to some information on CBS. And he goes, hey, man, that guy that you're quoting, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's got the penalties wrong. He's completely backwards on that. And I replied back. I said, well, first off, thanks, Dirk, for bringing that to my attention. Second off, I have a collection story, 8 o'clock in the morning. And he replied, I'm not looking for a collection, just helping you out. I really appreciated that. He could have been an a-hole about it. Said, hey, man, you're dead wrong. I need a collection. You're making me look like an ass, blah, blah, blah. No, he just said, no, I'm just looking out for you, helping you out, huh? Steve, when I get a text from a head coach or general manager, it's all about Brian. If you don't change this, there'll be a lawsuit, Zeke. How do you like that? we have different experiences. But, Steve, specifically for what Arians was saying on that interview, and by the way, how you find these things is it's unbelievable. Some guy does a radio station in Guam, and you got the transcript. I don't know how you do it, but... But Steve, you know my point that what coaches say to players behind closed doors, those are talking points. And if these players are smart, which they are, they can repeat those talking points when they're interviewed by the press. But I think they feel that it makes them look good in the coach's eyes.
Some just repeat it because they're all in, and some repeat it because of that reason, and some go the other direction. You got to sort of pay attention to and put the puzzle together. That's the fun of doing what we do, Eric, because we have, you know, many, many, many hours in a week, unlike fans, to put this crazy puzzle together that is the NFL season. Remember, there is no puzzle when you have storm damage. That means you call Florida's Elite Restoration. Go now to floridaseliterestoration.com so you can be ready. And Bill Curry Ford, we talked about them. Don't worry, drive Curry. That's what we like to say around here, Sage. Don't worry, drive Curry, Bill Curry Ford. .com. I'm not this podcast, IO, because we've touched enough on that, but Mark Dominic had a discussion on the radio the other day. He actually touched on it without naming us when the NFL launched the investigation into the Bucs tampering with players during the lockout. Dominic revealed a little bit about that. I'll share some of that and how we must have really everybody hated us at one buck probably for a week or two, so that was fun. I'm going to leave everybody with this because I know you wanted to chime in, and, you know, some fans care, some don't. Some never go to training camp, but it is something that we care about. The Bucks announced their 10 training camp dates that fans can attend. 8 of them are for special interest groups. 2 of them are for the general public. Now, that represents an expansion. Last year, it was 1 practice for the general public at a bad time. These are better times. And 2 years ago, it was 0 practices for the general public. Nearly every team has more for the general public. Pat Cohen on SiriusXM NFL Radio spoke about this today, actually, and said that, you know, teams really need to find a way, and the commissioner should figure it out, find a way to make sure fans are out there and, you know, 30,000 fans or so get to watch training camp because it's just good for the team. Now, there are still teams that have stadium practices like Arizona, which is ironic because Bruce Arians had them, and Todd Bowles had them out there, and the Jets do it, and Todd Bowles dealt with that in New York, so it's something he's dealt with before, but nothing with the stadium. However, capacity at Bucs training camps like 3,200, so to multiply that by 10 practices, you're going to have 30,000 fans out there. But Sage, bottom line, two practices open to the general public, up from one last year. Is that good enough? It's progress.
Not disappointedly. Not disappointed. I'm trying to not take this thing personal because Lee doesn't affect the three of us. You know, we're still good pencils, I hope, Lee, at this point. For training camp, Lee, the arrows, you know, you go, yeah, the arrows go up. You went from 0 to 1 to 2. I was told weeks ago that, you know, this going to, you know, they're going to open it up more. And I even said on the podcast, you know, that Canada totally went from 1 to 2. I was hoping for maybe 4 or 5. Lee, to me, it's misguided. Now, is that a way to try to build your season ticket base? It's, you throw them, an extra incentive? Maybe, Lee. But I'm all for growing, you know, people that watch the team, and then down the line, they want to be season ticket members. Maybe their financial situation doesn't lend them to that yet, but it will. Having said it, Lee, we've been out there enough to know that after about the first 6 or 7 practices, the attendance drops off, Lee. It does. It drops off. We've all seen it. It is absolutely, you know, crazy out there. You know, the first padded practice and the first day of after reporting is crazy. And it does drop off. But, Lee, to me, there's got to be a way, and there is a way. If you're committed to it, there's a way that, you know, the Ravens Wild fan can share, you know, the facility with the season ticket holders on a limited basis. You know, the first, 100 get in, you know, that sign up. I'm a little disappointed, Lee. We're the only ones that are talking about this. But, Lee, the name of the organization is Joe Buckskin. Somebody's got to represent the Ravens Wild. You know what, Lee? I'm happy to do it.
There you go. I am happy as well. I'm more in Steve's boat. I used to get outraged, and I think I had a reason to be outraged, because I thought that was really crapping on the fans, especially when Brady was around. And I harped on it enough that, good, bad, or indifferent, it got the attention of the higher-ups at One Buck Fellas. I won't go into great detail, but I know that I was on a conference call with Steve and a heavy hitter at One Buck Fellas to go over in detail why they were doing this. So, you know, the right people read it. The right people got the message. Would I like to see more open practices? Of course. But I'm kind of in Steve's boat. Progress. Double the amount that they had last year. Two isn't a whole lot, but it's double. It's progress, and I think it's a step forward, and better some than none. But I'm like you, Owen. I want to see what Cap does. Did they kill the team or whatever? Were they going to bankruptcy if they did that? I don't think so. Now, I'm just speaking for me here. I get why, you know, they explained to Steve and I why they don't do a night practice at the stadium. You know, it's the rain issue. And coaches go bananas and they lose a practice. I understand that. That, for me, that makes sense. For me, that's an understandable issue. I get it. But, you know, open up some more. You know, I don't want to go off the rails here, but I'm happy the Bucks are doing something for the fans. I'd like to see more, but something's better than nothing. Follow that comment years ago, I'm happy that they're making some improvements.
Sage, I want to clarify my boat. I'm pleased with the progress, but I still think it's an absolute clown show, and the Glazers should be ashamed of themselves, because it does not take a logistics team of 12 to figure out how to fill empty seats once the season ticket holders settle in, even on these special interest days. If there's 240 seats available after that, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out how to let regular people in. And there are plenty of people who'd be happy to line up for a chance to get in. And there are ways to do this. This isn't brain surgery. Also, anybody can go on Google and research the cost of aluminum bleachers and see that they don't cost that much, which is why they're at every high school tennis court, where you can add a little extra seating to make something happen. So I think it's a joke. I think it's a shame. And there's a reason the Bucks are at the bottom of the league with these practices open to the general public. And but it is better, so it's something. But it's a joke, and it's embarrassing.
Steve, I'm curious to know how many of the 31 teams references for the rank and file. I'm curious. I would find the ones at the very bottom, if not the bottom, in terms of open practices for non-season ticket holders. And I don't think that's a group that you want to belong to.
I'm pretty sure most of the teams, not all, but most of the teams, whatever seating they have, they put a certain amount open or a small time window open for the season ticket holders to grab the seats. And if they don't grab them, then the regular fans can grab them. And, you know, so maybe it's an 80-20 split at every practice kind of thing. But, you know, the other teams figure it out. And when I was at the Jets practice last week, you see people lined up for hours to get in. And, you know, it's not exactly a different looking place than $1. And they have the parking across the street at the stadium if they need it. Hopefully they figure something out, or maybe they open an extra practice, or who knows what. And not every practice is even open. And that's another situation. The Bucks are kind of low on the open practice total.
Well, here's my last point, Lee, on this subject. The Bucks do a lot of things well, some things very well. This policy is not one of them, Lee. It's not.
Like I said, I wish there'd be more open, but I like the progress. So hopefully next year they repeat it, they double it, and there'll be four practices.
Absolutely, and they could be a morning practice at the stadium. I don't know why it has to be a night practice, but maybe they'll get there. Ira Sage, you got any big plans for the rest of your week or before we see you again this week?
Well, I think we're going to the movies, Steve. I think we're going to the movies. I finally found a movie. I'll tell you more on the later podcast we do this week, if it was any good. And no, Lee, Bette Midler's not in it. But I got to get out of the heat, Steve. It's been rough. I can't go in the pool. The heat is crippling. I'm kind of housebound. So we're getting out, Steve. We're getting out. Dinner and a movie. Just like when I was courting my wife, dinner and a movie. And an entertainment break. That's all it takes.
Ira, what are you shoving in your face at the movies? What do we got? What are we buying at the snack bar? There's no way you're avoiding that thing.
No, as a matter of fact, I don't get any chuckles. I don't get any Twizzlers. There's no popcorn, Stevie. Whoa. Water. That's all I want is my bottle of water and a couple of gummies, and I'm good to go. You know, the gummies Russo eats, right? Yeah, Russo's into it, too.